This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Two proposals on the November ballot deal with elections. Proposal 2 would change the method of redistricting in Michigan, and Proposal 3 would enshrine a number of voting rights in the state constitution. The Citizens Research Council of Michigan has analyzed both proposals and prepared reports. Eric Lufer is the president of the Citizens Research Council. Thanks for being with us again, Eric.
Gordon, it's great to be back with you.
So let's begin with Proposal 2, which would change Michigan's method of redistricting. Kind of give us the bullet points here, what this would do.
So this proposal would take responsibility away from the legislature for drawing the lines for congressional and legislative seats after the census and give it to an independent commission. It would vest with the Secretary of State a number of responsibilities to help that commission carry out its task. It would dedicate funds to the legislature. Otherwise, could say, we're just not going to fund this, and you come to a standstill. So this proposal dedicates funds for the commission to carry out its task, and it defines criteria that the commission should use when drawing districts. You know, it goes into great detail where other constitutional amendments would say, we'll create an independent commission composed of these types of people, and the legislature shall provide for its functioning. This proposal goes into great detail and doesn't leave to the legislature much of anything to do as it relates to carrying out this task.
The standards that would be used for drawing districts for Congress and the state legislature, would they be radically different from what the legislature is supposed to use now?
Well, there's a little bit of repetition carry forward, and there's some new things. So as the Constitution was written, there was provisions for equal population as near as possible. This would say equal population. There were provisions for geographically contiguous districts, so you can't have district part of a district over here and another one over there and space in between. They have to all be connected. The current Constitution and state law tries to keep together county, city, and township boundaries, so we're not splitting up a city or a township. Keep it all together as much as possible. And it says that the districts have to be as reasonably compact as possible, so not long and it's drawn out, but try to put them as square-like as possible. And this would create new provisions that says that the commission should consider diverse populations and communities of interest. It's not clear what that is, but the idea is that people who think they have a community of interest should go to this commission and say, these are the people, this is the geographic area we want to keep together because of our community of interest. It says that the commission should not disproportionately advantage a political party, so it's kind of overtly saying we don't want any gerrymandering as part of this. It says that the commission should not favor or disfavor an incumbent official or candidate. So we've seen in the past where you take two existing districts and you put them together and only one incumbent can win in a situation like that. And then that last provision is try to avoid situations like that.
How would members actually end up on this commission?
It's kind of a complicated process. It involves random selection is the key thing that you have to know. The process begins with the Secretary of State creating an application, sending that out to a number of people to invite them to apply, but also putting it on the website so others can self-select, kind of put up their hand and say, I want you to pick me. There would be a date by which all the applications have to be submitted. And past experience, when you look at California and Arizona that have had similar plans, probably will have more than 200 applicants. So the first step is to get it down to 200 potential commissioners, and that's done by random selection. Those 200 commissioners have to fill three different buckets. You have to have 60 Republican people who identify with that party, 60 people who affiliate with the Democratic Party, and 80 independents. So three buckets. At that point, the House and Senate leadership from both parties are able to eliminate people, say we don't think that person is really a Republican, that person's not really independent, or, you know, whatever the reasons are, sort of like the voir dire process and jury selection, if you ever watch CSI or things like that. So now you have 180 candidates after those peremptory challenges, and then literally it's random selection, that you have those three buckets, you'll reach in, you'll pull out four names of Republicans, four names of Democrats, and five names of independents, and now you have a 13-member commission.
Is there any sort of vetting process to ensure that someone who says they're a Republican truly is a Republican? In other words, it's not a Democrat trying to sneak in. And for that matter, is there any sort of vetting to verify that someone doesn't have any obvious political leanings if they say they're an independent?
There's not. You're trusting people to be truthful, and they have to sign their name. So it's sort of creating a legal document. They're attesting that this is their political leanings one way or the other. That sort of voir dire process where people can, the legislative leaders can pull people out, is meant to deal with situations like that. And also the random selection. Again, I said Arizona and California have had this process, and they've had far more. So while there probably will be people trying to game the system, putting their name in to try to say they're something they're not, the large pool and the random selection doesn't mean that there's no guarantee that these people will end up in the final process. We looked at some of the other states, and Colorado has a similar proposal on their ballot in November. They'll be voting on in a couple weeks. And they actually have a process that says, do these people know anything about political science and the makeup of mapping and things like that? There's nothing like that in Michigan. It just says, if people want to be involved in this, then we're going to try to accommodate that, and we'll see what they come up with.
Are there some qualifications that people do? I mean, are there certain activities that would keep someone off of a redistricting commission, you know, holding elected office, that sort of thing?
Yeah, so this is one of the criticisms that people have had of this plan, is if you are currently an elected official, or if you're a family member of an elected official, that disqualifies you from participating in the commission. And, you know, so there's some complaints that then maybe it's discriminatory or issues like that. I think from the outside looking in, you see that this, the group that put this together, wanted to keep it so removed from the current political atmosphere that they tried to build a firewall between current politicians and who would be the commission member. So is it too far? That's up to the eye of the beholder, the voters, to say whether they like that or not.
So once you have this commission together, how do they actually go about the process of drawing new districts?
So the key point to know here is that it puts a lot of sunshine, we call it, the ability for people not involved in the commission to watch what's going on and to monitor that. So all the commissioners would be subject, the meetings would be subject to the Open Meetings Act, so everyone could attend and listen to what's going on. All communications between commissioners, from the public to the commission, all work product would be subject to the Freedom of Information Act. The complaint with the current process was that it all happened, you know, in a back room somewhere. They kind of did their thing and came forth and said, here's your maps, what do you think of those? With this process, they try to make it more public, and you can see what's going on. The commissioners would be required to have 10 meetings, 10 public hearings, before they even start putting a pencil to paper and drawing the maps. Once the maps are created, they're required to have more hearings to get public input. What do you think of these? And then you get to a decision process, and this is a very interesting, from a political science point of view, the sort of game theory that's built into a decision process, which you might suspect anytime you put four people that affiliate with the Republican Party and four people that affiliate with the Democratic Party, and now you say, come to an agreement. Well, we tried that before in the 60s and the 70s, and they couldn't come to an agreement. But this says, if you don't come to an agreement, we're just going to pick one of those maps by random selection. So if you're on either side of that, your worst fear is that they'll pick the map that's most favorable to the other party. So it creates a three-stage process. It says, first of all, can you just come to an agreement? If that fails, then they have something called rank order voting. So if you had five different maps, every commissioner would rank order, saying, I like this one the best, this one second best, and so on. And there's a process to go through that then to see if you can come to a consensus. And so you would suspect that somebody from one party would favor the map that's most favorable to them as number one, but number two would have to move towards the middle, and number three even further to the middle. So it pushes them towards consensus, and there's always that fear of that random selection. So sort of game theory would say you would never want to get to that point, so you better figure out how to come to a consensus before then. So, you know, it gets down in the weeds, it gets really complicated. But once you read through it and think about the details, it starts to make sense, and it starts to reflect how the majority of people think. They're not far right or they're far left. They just want government to work. And this pushes the parties to try to come to consensus and think about how can we make government work.
So there would be a randomly selected map out of one of these choices. So in other words, it would not ever end up before the Michigan Supreme Court, which has happened in the past when the legislature and the governor couldn't reach agreement.
They do their best to keep it away from the courts. They try to say, they put in these processes here to push towards consensus and try to find a map that could be agreeable to everyone.
In the conclusion of the CRC report, you say that voters have a choice here about what is more important in redistricting, transparency and imposition against bias, or accountability and efficiency. Kind of spell that out for us. What are the choices that we're facing here as voters on those two fronts?
So a vote for Proposal 2 is to say that you want to have the commission, you want to have the open process, so you can see what's going on, you can sit in meetings, you can follow the work product, you can know everything that went into creating the maps, and you're tired of gerrymandering. You don't think that's best for us as a state. That's the imposition against bias. Let's have fair maps that allow equal opportunity to get elected. If you vote for that, that's the direction you're moving. But if you are worried about the accountability measure, these commissioners could only be removed by the other commissioners. So if somebody was just so out of line and bogging down the system or something, it's not up to the legislature to remove them. It's not up to the courts to remove them. It's up to the other commissioners. And it would take a very high vote, 10 out of the 13 commissioners, to do that. So there's some complaint about accountability with that. You sort of look at the current process, and people of one party in the legislature have been doing this. And so if you're in the other party, it's hard to say there's accountability there. Accountability is an issue, however we think about this. And efficiency is the other downside of this. So as I said, the proposal dedicates funds. It says 25% of the budget of the Department of State that comes out of the general fund budget will go to these to operations of the commission. That's about $4.6 million compared to today's budget, as opposed to the small amounts that are going to the current process. So a big escalation in cost. I'll make clear this is $4.6 for 2 or 3 years. It's not for 10 years. The commission sort of does its work and then goes away. So as opposed to the current process, it will be more costly, and it's sort of a question of how much is democracy worth to you? Are you willing to pay to have this commission do its work for their salaries, for the meeting space, for the consultants, for the software, all that type of thing? How much is that worth to you to have a map that you don't think that doesn't feel as gerrymandered or looks fairer than what we have been getting in the last couple map-making processes.
Proposal 3 for voting rights. Again, give us the synopsis here of what this is going to do if voters do approve it.
So this would amend the state constitution. Article 2, Section 4, and create a number of voting rights for the voters in Michigan. It would start by protecting the right to a secret ballot. It would ensure that military service members and overseas voters get their ballots in time for their votes to count. Provides that voters would have the option to use straight party voting. It would automatically register citizens to vote at the Secretary of State's office anytime they go in for a license or a identification card, but the people can opt out. You can say, I don't want to be registered, but it would start with the assumption that everyone comes in there wants to be registered. It would allow citizens to register to vote anytime up until the day of the election with proof of residency. It would provide registered voters with access to absentee ballot for any reason, and it would has a provision to ensure the accuracy and integrity of elections by auditing the election results. So it does a lot of things. All of those are meant around making it easier to register to vote and easier to vote.
Straight ticket voting has been an issue which has come up every, 15, 20 years or so in recent memory in the Michigan legislature, where the lawmakers have tried to put an end to it, and then voters hold a referendum on it. And then in this last go around, there was an appropriation attached to it, so voters didn't have that option. When voters have had the option of using a straight ticket to be able to vote just all Republican or all Democrat, have they used it in Michigan?
They have. It sort of varies by geography. Detroit voters tend to use it substantially more often than other voters. But our experience going back and looking at past elections, we find that if you look at a countywide level, anywhere from 30 to 60% of the people are using the straight party option. And depending on the geography, that's being used to favor the Republican Party in some places and the Democratic Party in others. When you take out the Detroit vote, which is very heavily towards the Democratic Party, and look at all the rest of the state, it's pretty close to even how many people are using this and how many of them are voting for the R's or for the D's. So it doesn't seem to favor one party or the other having this option available to them.
Are most of the things which are being proposed here for the Michigan Constitution in this Proposal 3 things which other states have implemented in one way or another?
The answer to that is yes, and some of them are things that we already have in Michigan. So the right to a secret ballot is already in our Constitution, and it would say within the same section of the same article that you have this right to a secret ballot, it would say it twice. The provisions for overseas voters, for our soldiers to be able to vote, that's in federal law, and there's nothing we can do about that. The use of the straight party voting is tending to go away. A lot of states are getting rid of that, so this would lock it in where other states are doing what's being proposed in Michigan. So it would lock that in place. The automatic voter registration, there's a number of states that have gone down this path. I don't know how much longevity this will have. Is this something that's going to pick up steam or sort of peter out at some point? But there has been a number of states that have gone down this route. The anytime voter registration is one that really stands out, that more and more states are moving in that direction to allow up until election day or at least the week before, there's that movement in that direction. The no reason absentee ballot is something 37 states now have. And in Oregon, for instance, everybody votes absentee. There's not a place you can go on election day and wait in line and mark your ballot. Everybody receives their ballot in the mail and votes that way. And some states are thinking about online voting as an option for that. And the last one is the auditing of results, and that's found in Michigan law. It's probably not as strong as it should be, as we saw with the 2016 election. But it's pretty common. All the states provide some form of audit. This isn't a recount. This is an audit that has some security that the votes were counted right, the machines worked and everything like that. It's pretty common, and you would suspect that's what we would want as a democracy. We want to know your votes are counted and everything was done on the up and up.
So the CRC report raises the question here of putting these issues into the state constitution, whether or not they're good policy or not, should they be in the state constitution? Now, if you believe they are good policy, what might be the problem with having these things actually enshrined in the Michigan Constitution as opposed to just a regular state law?
So anytime we put something into the Constitution, the only way to amend it, if it needs fixing, or to take it out, is to create another amendment to do that. And that requires either the legislature acting to put something on the ballot or going through and collecting petitions, as was done with this proposal, and then the people vote on it. Either way, the people have to vote on it. But it's a very cumbersome way of creating law. And so our point is, if you think back 50 years to when our Constitution was drafted, they never contemplated really this, the prevalence of absentee balloting or the opportunity to register up until election day and the mechanics of that. And there was really a attitude with the commission, the Constitutional Convention delegates, that something should be done legislatively, that this is the Constitution is to create the framework. It shouldn't have all the minutiae of running our government. So now if you think forward 50 years, what is the election process going to look like? Are we going to have some security that we could move to online voting? You know, it's hard to imagine what will happen in 50 years. And our point with asking this question is, does this constitutional provision preclude us from evolving, precluding us from doing what other states might be able to do because they can deal with this legislatively? Yes, it provides a great deal of security that the legislature won't tamper with it and the will of the people will be carried out. But does it become an impediment to evolution and impediment to efficiency in the future? It's just something to think about.
Eric Lufer is the president of the Citizens Research Council of Michigan. As always, Eric, thank you very much for your time.
It was great to be back with you. Thanks for having the opportunity to do this.
Citizens Research Council's analysis of this year's ballot proposals can be found at crcmich.org. Links are also available at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.